Good morning, everybody.
Lovely to be here. And it's a bit of a long passage, this one, but it's a great passage and it's a great story to read and sit and think about. And just for us to get our mind into the right way of thinking today, I'd just like you to think about when you came into church this morning and you're seeing people, maybe you haven't seen them for a week or a couple of weeks. And we're going to go out and have some tea and coffee after the service. One of the most, most common questions that is going to be asked as we come in and as we go to morning tea is, so how are you? How was your week? How's your morning been? And that's the first question that we tend to ask people. And I'm going to say, why do we ask this question? Well, it's polite and it does show our desire to engage with people around us. But it also presupposes something that we are all subject to, and that we're all subject to having good days and bad days and unexpected days, horrible days and confusing days. No day is the same. Our lives can have many complications and twists and turns. Very rarely do they go to plan. Phone calls can come out of the blues with news that we weren't expecting. A conversation on the phone that just didn't go the right way at all and leaves us all confused. Family members suddenly requiring our attention, or work-related matters that call upon us urgently. Friends that require time and support that we weren't expecting. How do we respond and react to these sorts of complexities of our days? How do we keep a sense of calm when circumstances appear to be spinning out of our control? How do we navigate life when we have no control even over what happens to us tomorrow? Well, today in John 11, the story of Lazarus being raised to life, I hope we can be enlightened and encouraged through the words and actions of Jesus that there is a way. So let's have a look at this passage. Just to put some context to what we're looking at today, Jesus at the commencement of chapter 11 is teaching and preaching in the countryside across the Jordan River, and it's a place called Bethany beyond Jordan. Now, it's a little bit different to the Bethany of Mary, Martha and Lazarus. They lived up about 28 kilometres away in the real Bethany, and that's about a 1,200 metre slog up of fairly steep hill. Bethany is actually very close to Jerusalem. It's only about 3 kilometres away from where Jerusalem is. So it's helpful to see that if Jesus needed to, if he was doing a tough mutter, he could have got there in a day. That's sort of how it could be looked at. It's also just helpful to remember that Jesus was preaching and teaching in this area following the time he'd spent in Jerusalem. And if you remember, the last 2 weeks we've been talking about how Jesus healed a blind man in Jerusalem. And then it also goes on and talks about the story of the Pharisees and the Jewish leaders trying to pin Jesus down on who he actually was. And at the end of chapter 10, things got rather nasty and ended badly. And the Jewish leaders were trying to seize Jesus and stone him. So Jesus left Jerusalem at this point. And to the relief of the disciples who were feeling quite impacted by their life being threatened like this, were not so keen to be heading back anytime soon to Jerusalem. So we start in chapter 11 with the main characters of the story being introduced. Lazarus comes on the scene, and the passage notes that he is Martha and Mary's brother. Lazarus is very sick, and the sisters send word out to Jesus of his plight. I think we just skipped two. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So a significant point in this story is that Martha, Mary and Lazarus were loved by Jesus. Now, Jesus does love everyone, as we know, but here in this passage we see love at a much more personal level. He really loved these people. And we see this in verse 3, where the message came from Lazarus' sisters that the one you love is sick. In verse 5, Jesus loved Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Verse 11, Jesus talked to his disciples saying, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. And then we also see Jesus' emotional response when he gets to the grave. So when Jesus received news of Lazarus being critically sick, what was his first response? It says Jesus stayed 2 more days. And he seemed to be in no hurry and not respond as we would expect someone to respond. It seems on the surface a little bit insensitive, maybe a little bit heartless to someone that you love. So Jesus intentionally delayed going to Bethany, having discerned a grander plan that God had in store for this moment, which in verse 4 he says that this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. And so after an initial delay of 2 days, Jesus then says, let's head towards Judea. Now it's time for the disciples to attempt to delay. So far, they are concerned, as far as they're concerned, this is a very bad idea. They didn't see any good in going back. It was like going back into the lion's den. The last time they were in Jerusalem, they were almost killed by the Jewish leaders who continued to be on the hunt for Jesus. My paraphrase is, are you crazy? What was Jesus' response? That's his response. Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It's when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light. Now, when I first read that, I felt like that's a bit of a cryptic thing to say. What does Jesus sort of mean by this? So my sense is that Jesus is drawing an analogy between the 12 hours of daylight in a day that a typical person of his genre would spend walking and working as an illustration of the time Jesus has on this earth as determined by his Father in heaven. Jesus is saying that his 12 hours of daylight in this world is not yet finished. For Jesus, he is walking in the light by abiding and working in obedience to the will of his Father. It's still daylight, and night, which is his death, has not yet come. It's okay for him to return back to Judea. Jesus has a keen sense of God's plan for this situation and what he is called to do. He was content to rest in God's sovereign purpose at this moment. So, despite the competing, complex motivations of a friend, a dear friend who was dying, disciples who are saying, we don't want to go back there because our lives are going to be threatened, and actually Jesus was doing some good work down at the river, Jesus actually at this point had a very clear, calm presence and a sense of his road ahead. And there's a principle here that I feel like Jesus was having his disciples consider, walking in the light of his way. And I wonder how the disciples were processing this. And I wonder how we process this as we read this Bible. How do we walk in the light and not become lost and confused and overwhelmed by the complexities of our lives and decisions that we have to make sometimes? Is it reasonable for Jesus to expect the disciples or us to be able to discern this way? And how do we prevent ourselves from walking in the darkness and not stumble? Let's just think about these questions as we go through this passage further. So after Jesus has talked about walking in the light, in verse 11, he talks of Lazarus being asleep. And this has done its little jump along. And I think it even jumped a little bit. Anyway, we'll just leave it at that for the moment. And so he says Lazarus is asleep and that they were going to go and wake him up. The disciples did not fully understand what Jesus was driving at. And they continued to make the case that there was no need to be going back and risking their lives and putting themselves in danger. If he's only asleep, he'll wake up on his own. It's okay. But then Jesus does speak plainly to them of the situation, further states that he is glad for their sakes that they are not there so that they will believe. And he says, let's go to him. And Thomas, still, I'm going to say, in the dark, responds to the rest of the disciples, well, let's go that we may die with him. I think it's a fascinating contrast. Jesus going to Bethany to conquer death and light, and the disciples are going to Bethany for death and darkness. And there's a real contrast there. They are misaligned with that greater divine moment that Jesus has and is alluding to. And so they go in trepidation to Bethany. The passage then moves on to their arrival in Bethany, and Lazarus has been dead 4 days. I feel like the timing of this is quite significant, and I suspect that it's part of God's plan for this moment. In those days, it was believed that a person's soul departed from their bodies after 4 days or 3 days. It sort of hung around. And it was very likely, I'd say, that Martha and Mary would have believed that Lazarus was now a completely lost cause. He was 4 days dead, and his soul had now departed his body completely. A significant moment in the departure of a person in this world. And verse 17 to 37 describes Jesus' exchange with Mary and Martha. So, firstly, Martha. When Martha was informed that Jesus had arrived in town, she didn't waste any time and went straight out to find him. She was looking for answers of what was going on. And Martha's opening salutation to Jesus was not, "Hello, how was your trip?" It was straight out, full frontal, with a degree of disappointment and hurt you could sense. "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." But then she does soften her approach a little bit and say, "But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask." I feel like it's a really interesting play here where you see the wrestle in Martha. On one hand, she is feeling for her brother who is lost, but on the other hand, she's just wondering how much authority did Jesus really have in this situation? There's a tussle going on. And Jesus says to her, "He will rise again." Martha responds, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." In the same way, this statement confirms her sense that Lazarus' soul has departed, but there is hope at the end. Her brother has gone for now, but she definitely believes that he will rise at the end. Jesus continues with a powerful declaration of who he is. "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" Such a powerful statement. Martha's response is, "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come to this world." Now, Martha has said all the right things, hasn't she? She's got her beliefs right. Her answers are perfect. But I'm going to ask, does she really have the faith in what Jesus can do in this moment? And I feel like there's a wrestle going on between Martha's knowledge of Jesus and in this moment what she's prepared to dare think that Jesus could do. And I'm going to say that's our journey as well. We all have moments like this where we're trying to dare believe what Jesus has said he's got authority to do. The conversation stops here, and Martha goes to get Mary and says to her, "Teacher, the teacher is here and is asking for you." Mary goes to Jesus quickly and says the same words as Martha had just said. "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." But this came from a very different place to Martha. Mary was heartbroken, and she was mourning the loss of her brother and was in deep sorrow. She was not looking for answers, as was Martha, but she was in a deep place of grief. And Jesus is deeply moved and responds to her grief in a beautiful way. Verse 35 is the shortest verse in the Bible, but metaphorically speaks 1,000 words of the depth of Jesus' love and care for his friends. What does it say? Jesus wept. Jesus then goes to the tomb. And as he approaches the tomb, he asks for the stone to be rolled away. And you see Martha, thinking through the issues, protesting, this is a dumb idea. There's been 4 days of death here and there's going to be a bit of a smell. But Jesus reminds her, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? The stone is removed, and Jesus, with the authority that only he possesses, affirms for the benefit of the crowd. Sorry, I'm going to go one more. Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. Followed by the command in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The story closes here with the dead man Lazarus rising in his tomb clothes and coming out of the tomb with Jesus asking them to take off the grave clothes and let him go. As Jesus foretold, this sickness did not end in death, but was done for God's glory and his Son. And the account concludes with many people believing in line with Jesus' words that he spoke. It's interesting that at this point in the story, there's no time where the Bible goes into how Martha reflected on this and Mary and the disciples. But let's do that a little bit ourselves now. Let's think about Martha and Mary. They had a very sick brother. They cared for him. They believed that Jesus could have healed Lazarus and fully expected that Jesus would have come immediately. You can see via their reactions to Jesus that they were distraught. They felt betrayed by Jesus, that he had not come sooner. Lazarus had already passed away 4 days ago. They felt the opportunity for Jesus to save had gone. There was disappointment and hurt, and hope of healing was vanished. Their light had turned to darkness. Did Jesus really care for his friends? Let's also think about the disciples in this moment. The disciples could only see the threat of death in the road ahead back to Bethany. They weren't thinking life. Self-preservation was uppermost in their minds and blinded them from seeing the light of why they were heading back to Bethany. Let's just think a little bit about our circumstances that we often find ourselves in life. Lord, I've got this timeline here. Lord, answer me. Where are you? If I don't get an answer today, I just don't know what I'm going to do. I'm feeling lost. Lord, this is the perfect opportunity for me. If I don't get this, I'm going to be in a bad place. I need this opportunity for so many reasons. Jesus, if you don't fix this situation soon, it's going to be catastrophic for me. Why is this happening to me, Lord? Surely this can't be part of your plan. How frequently do we think of that we know better than Jesus? How often we're focused on getting answers or resolutions on our terms rather than committing to and resting in his guidance and time? How often have we an expectation of when an answer is required and also what the answer should be? When God doesn't come through as we expect, we can lose faith and start to doubt, maybe get a bit disillusioned. Where is God? He's not listening to me. Now, let us just think about Jesus in this passage. Jesus, as we said, was preaching the good news down on the river. Then the triple O call comes concerning his beloved friend Lazarus being gravely ill. And the disciples are in his ear, saying this is not a good idea going back to Jerusalem or Bethany. How does Jesus navigate these competing priorities? I'm going to say to you, I believe a very significant factor is the regularity by which he sought his Father's presence, where he retreated from the hustle of his day to desolate places to spend time with his Father. An example that really clearly shows this is in Luke 15:16. When Jesus healed a man of leprosy, which culminated in huge crowds following him and wanting to see him, and Luke records at this time, the news spread about him all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. You can just feel the pressure coming in from all over the place. But what does it then say? But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Jesus remained firmly in relationship with God, his light, no matter what his personal circumstances were. Busier didn't mean less time with God. For Jesus, solitude, prayer, quiet places were so important to his life and sacred to him, and it helped him to be grounded in his Father's will and purpose, to walk in the light and not be distracted or overwhelmed with the competing priorities of a day. And so when we think about this for ourselves, how do we walk in the light? Thinking about how Jesus did things is a great way to look at this. Now, I'd just like to say a couple of points, 3 points in fact. In our hurried and relentless pace of life, God's quiet, still voice can be crowded out with the barrage of things that demand our attention. And it's good to slow down at some point daily to be with God. So I'm going to ask you, do you have a place in your day where you can be with God, to be still and to be quiet and to listen and to process your thoughts and pray? Our busyness can very much be an obstacle to this. For me, it works best first thing in the morning. And it's a time for me to reflect on the day previously. Did I show Christ's love in my actions and interactions yesterday? To think about it and to respond accordingly. It's also a time to read the Bible, pray for the day ahead, and to be in a good place to face whatever comes for the day. I sense that's certainly what Jesus did as part of his retreat to quiet places. Secondly, I think talking and praying with trusted friends about our circumstances. Jesus calls us to live our lives in fellowship with others. Praying and talking of our circumstances with trusted friends is encouraging, and it helps us when we know others are also praying for us. The blessing of a church community is that we have opportunity to be sharing and praying for each other as we do our lives together. And I'm going to ask you, are you someone who utilizes the opportunity of our church community to have prayer and to share in your daily life? And then the other thing I'd say is reading and meditating on God's word regularly. It's great to have a toolkit of promises and psalms that can encourage us as we seek God's light in our lives. So, by way of example, I'd love to share this psalm with you, which is Psalm 13. And it's an example of how scriptures can be so helpful to us. Now, this psalm is a lament by King David. And it's at a time when he felt abandoned and alone, and that God was distant and not answering his pleas for help. It's 6 verses long, and if I read it in my normal speed, it took me exactly 33 seconds. And I'm going to suggest, though, that if you approach this psalm and rattle it off in 33 seconds, I'm quite certain you're going to likely think that Rowan's barking right up the wrong tree and that it's 33 seconds I'll never get back. But I'm going to suggest that there's an alternative way that we think of a psalm like this. This psalm has 3 sections of 2 verses. And the first, and as I just speak to this, I'd love you to encourage you to read the verses as we go through this. But the first 2 verses are a cry out to God to honestly express our hurt and our pain, our confusion and our worry and our fears, and express them before God. It's telling God how you are feeling in this moment. Now, this could take a while. This is not something that it might take us 5 seconds, but it also might take us all day to think about these sorts of things. Sometimes what we're feeling is quite complicated and complex, and there's multiple emotions that are playing at any one time. And it's really helpful just to sit in that moment and to work through those things. And sometimes it's really good to write down how you're feeling, just so that you've got a sense of that. The second 2 verses then move into handing over your burdens into God's care and petitioning him for his guidance and his strength, and that we have a sense of his presence in the situation. And it's asking him for an answer at his time and place. It also talks about enemies. What are our enemies? Who are they? Well, I'm going to say to you, our enemies can be our nagging thoughts of doubt, feeling that God is uncaring and distant, and also the need that we have to feel like we need to control this process. We want an answer that's our answer in our time frame. And then the third two verses call for praise and thanksgiving and remembering the goodness of God, his abundant love and his constancy with us, that he is reliable, unchanging, and we can place our hope in him. It's a time to reflect on how he has answered our prayers in the past and to be thankful for these. And as I said, this could take 10 minutes, it might take a couple of hours, it even might take a couple of occasions before God, depending on what the situation is that we're wrestling is. But I'm going to say to you that the key is really that the process takes as long as it requires for our burdens to be identified in our lives ourselves and our burdens to be shifted from our need to control and carry them and committing them to God, and for us to sense that release and have a posture of thankfulness and rest in our loving Father. That's how long this psalm takes to pray. And the process of walking, and the process of doing this in this psalm is helping us to walk from darkness into light. And it's a great place to be. A great place to be is where we have identified our anxieties and in our spirit and heart have been able to relieve ourselves of the burden of these and place them squarely at the feet of Jesus. We won't necessarily have all the answers as we expect, nor we won't have all those answers. And that doesn't matter if we have faith and trust in Jesus, that he has our best interests at heart and he will answer in his time and way because he loves us. It's also good just to be aware that the world we live in and the troubles that we have will not disappear. However, they need not impact our lives, control or overwhelm us. God's presence with us provides light. It provides perspective amidst a dark world that desires to distract us if we are not careful. So just as we close, we are close, there we go. Just love us to just sit with our vision statement for a second and just reminding us as we go across, the first circle in green is our loving God and us sitting with our loving God. The second is our identity and purpose that we find in God. The third is us belonging together in community. And the fourth is our walking together to love and to serve others. And I feel like what we've been talking about today speaks really nicely into the first two. And the question I'd just like to for you to consider as we sit here is, how big is the God that you follow in your life? Do you have a sense of his bountiful love for you and also his power and authority over all things, including death? How big is your God? Secondly, are you willing to rest in him as you do life? We all have a sense of wanting to control our future and control the circumstances of our everyday. But I'm saying to you, are you prepared to place these desires at the feet of Jesus and let go? I'd love to invite us to just to think on a few things as we go through this coming week. And these are reflection questions, really, that we can ask ourselves. How do you personally lean into Jesus for guidance and truth? How do you do that on a day-to-day or a week-to-week basis? And what steps do you take to rest and trust in God in the day-to-day? Great questions just to think about and how you do that. And do you have a conviction of God's purpose in your life? Can you sort of write it down and express it? Have a clear sense of that. Jesus wants us to experience the power and authority he has, even over death. And I'm going to say to you, do you have issues and circumstances that you are wrestling with that you do find difficult to lay at Jesus' feet? Are you finding it difficult to accept that he will provide in his time and place? And are you experiencing doubt? I think it's great as an opportunity this week to sit with Psalm 13 if some of these things are pertinent to you, and pray through that process and sense God with you in that. And I think the other thing I'd encourage us to do is these are good questions to be asked and asking ourselves, but it's also good if we can feel comfortable to talk with people around us about our concerns and sometimes our doubts, because we can encourage each other and we can pray for each other and we can walk together with each other in the moment. We're not meant to be islands. We're meant to be a community, and to be able to share and encourage each other is a good thing. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much that you are the light and that you are the way, and that when we turn our face upon you, we don't walk in the darkness. And Father, I just pray that you would that you would help us by your Spirit to discover ways that each of us find the way to really look in your wonderful face, and to find times in our days where we can just rest and enjoy your presence with us. And Father, we just pray this in your name. Amen.